Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, 60 minutes of old-time radio crime stories every Wednesday. We'll hear first this week from the adventures of Philip Marlowe and his story titled The Bid for Freedom. That one aired January 21st, 1950. Then it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Alonzo Chapman Matter, his episode from July 4th, 1951.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road. Those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. This time a twisted mind, a hole cut in a wire fence, and a corpse in a storeroom. All added up to freedom, but only for the one who had it coming.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Bid for Freedom.
Never fail. When you worry over your bank statement, then hug your office phone from 9 to 5 anxious for business, nothing happens. But the minute you decide you'll get rich another day, chuck the puny balance sheet into a bottom drawer and make plans, you want it. And that was exactly the way it played when at 3 o'clock on the kind of slate-gray afternoon that makes the beckoning Santa Fe Railroad vacation billboards look a little more so, I left a note on my office door and headed outside and across the street for some real Hungarian goulash.
Very good today.
A second after, a waiter disappeared into the kitchen with my order. She was standing at my elbow. Not quite young, not quite pretty, not quite blonde. And when she spoke, not quite sure of what she was going to say next.
You're Mr. Philip Marlowe, aren't you? I mean, the private detective whose office is across the street?
Yeah, that's right.
My name is Helen Asher.
No?
I have to find someone. You do that kind of work, don't you? Finding people, I mean.
That all depends, Miss Asher. Who's the person you have to find?
Leon Rodell, a friend.
Uh-huh.
You see, I just got into town. I had his address in my handbag, but I lost it. The handbag, that is. And I don't exactly know which way to
turn. Well, just a minute, Miss Asher. Let's take it a step at a time, huh? Here, now sit down.
Oh, and... no. No, thank you. I'm in a hurry, Mr. Marlowe. Leon Rodell isn't listed in the phone book. I've tried that, and I don't know the name of his firm, his business name. He deals in ceramics.
Is that all you can tell me?
Oh, no. I have something else. It's a name and an address here in Los Angeles. Fortunately, that wasn't in my handbag, but here in my coat. No.
No what, Miss Asher?
Outside there, on the street.
What's on the street?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Hey, Miss Asher, wait a minute. There'd been a sort of sad look about Helen Asher that made me want to help her. So after an even sadder look at the plate of goulash that was coming toward me from the kitchen, I followed her to the street.
Mr. Marlowe, the goon!
When I reached the sidewalk, she was across the street in a cab and away. That might have been the end of it if something small and ugly that had been standing just outside the restaurant hadn't turned and moved into the alley alongside the building. On a hunch that he'd had something to do with the sudden exit of Miss Asher, I followed him and found him standing next to a line of empty ash cans, calmly lighting a cigarette.
You always run into alleys to light your cigarettes?
You always concerned?
What do you know about Helen Asher?
Helen Asher? I haven't any idea who you're talking about.
Come on, little man. I'm talking about the gal who just got into that cab. Do the words begin to flow?
Or do I wring him out of here?
Pete, get your hands off me. You're ripping my pocket.
You're lucky it isn't your nose. Come on, talk.
All right, all right. It's no secret. Here, it's all in this letter. Look, right here. Oh!
Toe of his sharp pointed shoes and caught my shin where it really hurt. By the time I was out of the ash cans, back on my feet. I knew the damage had been more to my dignity than anything else. I knew also that the little man was gone, and I had no idea where.
I was halfway out toward the street before I realized that I still had the little man's letter clenched in my hand. It was from an Omaha life insurance company and addressed to one Eldon Hook, 31 Marlborough Drive, Sunnydale, California. Sunnydale wasn't just around the corner, but the fear I'd seen in Helen Asher's face plus a score to settle with Eldon Hook said the 20-mile drive into the San Fernando Valley was a minor point. Under the gray sky overhead that thickened by the minute, Sunnydale, about the size of the hole in a candied lifesaver, looked as warm and cheerful as crepe paper. And number 31 Marlborough Drive, also gray, was no improvement from the ponderous, bleak stone buildings which said Queen Victoria should have slept there. Past the high, thick wire fence that surrounded it to the wrought iron gate in front of me labeled Hillcrest Sanitarium. Keep out. Took 10 minutes of softly phrased questions and answers to get the boss man, a Dr. Chinetti, to the gate. I told him who I was and what brought me to him, including a description of Eldon Hook.
I don't understand. Come in, Mr. Marlowe, please. Eldon Hook has been with us as an attendant for more than a year now, and his behavior has always been satisfactory. Nothing would surprise me anymore today. By the way, sir, what did you say that woman's name was? The one who approached you in the restaurant?
Oh, Helen Asher. Is it possible that she was once a patient here, Doctor?
No.
Oh. What about Leon Rodell?
Leon Rodell? How do you know that name?
From Helen Asher. She was looking for him. That's why she wanted to hire me. She knew he was here in Los Angeles.
Mr. Marlowe, this woman, was she young? About 30, blonde?
Yeah, that's right. Why?
Why? Because this morning, earlier, about 6 o'clock, one of our patients escaped. A woman you know as Helen Asher, and we know as Charlotte Rodell, Leon Rodell's wife.
Oh. She's insane, huh?
Temporarily, yes. Come over here, near the fence.
Ah.
I'll show you how she got away. But how she managed to cut through enough of this thick wire-link fence to make a hole large enough to crawl through is beyond me. Here, look, behind this ivy.
Uh-huh. Even with a good wire snipper, it would take hours to get through all these strands, huh? Wasn't she missed inside?
Yes, but she was only gone minutes. Apparently, she had been doing a little at a time during her recreation period, at night, whenever she could. Be careful of the burrs and those bushes there, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Tell me, Doctor, has the police been notified?
Of course, at once. The law compels us to. And frankly, Mr. Marlowe, I'm terribly worried.
Oh?
You see, it was her husband, Leon Rodell, who had her confined here a year ago. 6 months after their marriage, she began to act strangely. He felt it would be only with our help that she could ever regain her mental equilibrium. I thought that we were accomplishing that.
Apparently no, huh?
Obviously no. But, Mr. Marlowe, we must call the Los Angeles police right away and tell them that Leon Rodell now lives here, not in San Francisco. He must be protected.
Yeah, I see your point. Yeah, she did break out. She is trying hard to find Leo, and three, she ran from Eldon Hook, who was very close on a trail.
That's right, Mr. Marlowe. That's why I suggest that Leon Rodell discontinue seeing his wife as of last month. He always left Charlotte very upset. But now I'd better call the police.
That's a good idea. Although Charlotte didn't know where her husband was staying or what the name of the ceramics business was, she... Say, Doc. Doc, she claimed that she lost her handbag. Have you found it by any chance?
Yes, we did. We found it in the brush near a hole in the fence. I've got it right here in my desk.
Oh, good.
There was an address on the card in it. 3840 something. Yes, here it is. 3840 Lookout Terrace.
Lookout Terrace. Lookout Terrace. That's right here in the valley, up in the hills, south of Ventura Boulevard.
Mr. Marlowe, if possible, I'd like to avoid having the papers get hold of this story. This is a rather exclusive nursing home.
So?
Well, in a sense, you're already in this case. Could you try to find Charlotte Rodell and bring her back here before the police do?
Well, Dr. Chinetti,
It would be doing a great service for the woman and her husband. I'll pay you your fee.
All right, Dr. Chinetti, I'll try. I'll call you as soon as I have something. When I first started Marlborough Drive in Sunnydale, it had been a combination of interest in a sad-eyed girl and a strong desire to punch Eldon Hook on the nose. Now it was business. It took 20 minutes of fast driving to get over to Lookout Terrace and the hills that separate Hollywood from the San Fernando Valley, and 3840 itself. The house was a squat chunk of overly stuccoed, archaic California architecture at the top of a steep driveway. And when I was out of my car and walking toward the front door, everything was black, except tiny pinpoints of light sparkling up from the floor of the valley I just left.
Good evening. I hope I didn't startle you, Mr. Rodell.
Mr. Rodell?
Oh, I know your name. Yes, sir. And I know some other things as well.
Like what?
Oh, incidental facts. Like, well, it's cool in there. So you haven't been home in hours.
And?
And the refrigerator's empty, so you're only staying here off and on. Also, the old mail inside, phone bills, etc. They don't have your name or this address. So this is probably a friend's house.
Which totals to what?
To zero, maybe. Zero, Mr. Rodell, like you're gonna total if you don't pay the money you owe to my good friend in San Francisco. Yeah, you know who I mean, don't you, Mr. Rodell?
Yeah. What I don't know is how good friend thinks I'm going to raise that kind of dough. I made it funny?
Oh, you're kidding. What's 15,000 to you? You, shall I say, an intimate friend of Ordeen Blackburn?
Oh, Ordeen Blackburn.
Yeah, Ordeen Blackburn. Come off it, boy. I'm thorough. An eager sort. I know that the lady from Bel Air's loaded and that she's nuts about you.
No fooling.
Now, before I leave, a word of advice, Rodell. One can't run away from his obligations forever. And you won't be able to walk away after 24 hours. Unless, of course, you pay. Good night.
Good night, Eager. Till we meet again. Oh. There'll be some heat in here somewhere. Oh, operator, I'd like the telephone number of a Miss Ordeen Blackburn in Bel Air. I don't have the address.
Have you tried your directory, sir?
No, I can't. The house burned down.
One moment, please.
Yeah.
We have an Ordeen Blackburn at 2321 Bel Air Road.
Yeah, that's it. What's the number, please?
Nevin, 31121.
31121. Thank you. House burned down.
Hello?
Hello, Miss Blackburn.
Yes, this is she.
Miss Blackburn, my name is Philip Marlowe. I'm a private detective who at the moment is anxious to get hold of Leon Rodell. You know where he is?
Yes, I do, but I don't think...
Now, please, it's important. Leon Rodell's life is in danger. I want to help him.
Leon's life? What's going on, Mr. Marlowe?
Well, there isn't time to explain, believe me.
That's what she said, but
who said?
Someone who called about 20 minutes ago. A Miss Helen Asher.
Oh?
She said she was supposed to meet Leon at his storeroom about purchasing some ceramics. But she forgot his address there.
Did you give it to her?
Well, yes, I did.
Oh, great. She's the one who's after him. What's that address? Come on, quick.
3909 and a half Ventura Boulevard. It's in the rear of a parking lot. But tell me, Mr. Marlowe, what's wrong?
Well, there's plenty wrong. For one thing, I... Talk to you again, baby, some other time.
I doubt it, Mr. Rodell. Jumped to a hasty conclusion, didn't I?
Yeah, you did, Eager. You see, I'm really only a bill collector, just like yourself, so why don't we...
Get some makeup. Not a chance, sweetheart. I wouldn't be happy that way. I wouldn't know when you were telling the truth and when you were lying. You know what I mean? The Marlowe. Now, as I said before, good night.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, CBS will bring you the earth-shaking premiere of a new opera tomorrow night, an opera written by Alec Templeton with Charlie McCarthy as the lovelorn singing Bengal Lancer. Templeton himself as a Maharaja and Ursel Twing as a flying carpet salesman. You can hear it on the CBS Charlie McCarthy Edgar Bergen Show tomorrow night. And don't forget, Red Skelton, Amos and Andy, Eve Arden, Horace Hyde, and all the other CBS Sunday night stars will also be on hand on most of these same CBS stations. Jack Benny, of course, is heard in them all on Sundays. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Bid for Freedom.
Gunblood I'd been slapped with felt like a log chain. Next time would be different. I waited till Iga drove away and then went out and got in my car and unwound my way down the hill again to Ventura Boulevard. There I turned west and drove out to 3909 and a half. There's a glass and neon super grocery store closed for the night. And the only light showing at Leon Rodell's ceramic outfit trickled out on the ground in a narrow wedge to what had to be a partly open back door. Then even as I watched it, the wedge danced through a crazy pattern and disappeared. I ran for it and got there just in time to see Charlotte Rodell dart down the alley. A second later, she vanished in the shadowy jumble of backyard buildings. I knew there was no use trying to follow her. Instead, I eased the storeroom door open and looked into the room full of flower pots, lamp vases, and dishes. Nothing moved. Charlotte, I was sure, had a reason for running, so I went in toward a table in the corner where the only light was burning. I was almost up to it before I saw the reason. Yeah, it was a good one. Eldon Hook, the sanitarium attendant, was on the floor behind the table, his body still trying to arch away from the knife in his back. But I bent over and he opened his eyes. They were already cloudy.
I was close. I found the hole in the fence and I knew Ordeen was...
Ordeen what, Hook? Who did it? Can you tell me?
I never figured on...
I left Eldon Hook just as he was. Went to the door that opened to the front of the ceramic shop. A desk was there with a phone on it. I got halfway through the homicide bureau number when a silhouette showed up at the curtains at the front door. I put the phone down, stepped back into the shadows, and waited.
Oh, that's funny. They've left the work light on.
Not necessarily, Mr. Rodell.
Who are you?
Name's Marlowe. I'm a private detective. You are Leon Rodell, aren't you?
Yes. What are you doing here in my shop?
You better finish taking your overcoat off, Mr. Rodell.
Now, see...
Your wife has run away from Hillcrest Sanitarium.
My... Charlotte is out?
That's right.
How do you know this?
She came to me tonight under a phony name. Tried to get me to locate you. She'd lost your address.
Oh. This is a shock, Mr. Marlowe. A terrible shock. Poor Charlotte, what an awful thing this is for her.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I need this.
Sure.
Oh, you?
No, thanks.
You see, Marlowe, I've only been here in Los Angeles a month. The last time I visited Charlotte, that was about 3 weeks ago, and I hadn't planned to stay out. Wait a minute. My wife is the only one who had my local address. If she lost that, how did you find me?
That's a long story. I got the address Charlotte lost, and I've already been up to your house, but the last step was a call to a Miss Ordeen Blackburn.
Ordeen?
Yeah, she sent me up here.
Oh, then you know about Ordeen and me.
A little.
Well, I suppose under the circumstances, that's hard for you to understand, Marlowe, and even harder to accept.
Not exactly under the circumstances.
Oh, well, the law is not as generous as you are. Has no room for understanding. Insanity isn't grounds for divorce until after 3 long years have passed.
And maybe Miss Blackburn doesn't want to wait that long, huh?
Well, to be frank, I don't know. I'm in love with her. I think she loves me. I haven't had the courage to tell her about Charlotte yet.
Maybe you won't have to. Charlotte called her up tonight before I did. It's a Miss Asher. She must have gotten Ordeen's name and phone number from you somewhere on that last visit of yours.
No, that's impossible.
Well, she got it somewhere.
Marlowe. Do you know where Charlotte is? We've got to find her. She's not responsible. She might even be dangerous.
It's an understatement, Rodell. She's deadly.
Deadly? I don't understand.
Come here. Over behind that table there where the light is.
What?
Go ahead and look.
Well, what's over there?
When I showed up here tonight, I saw Charlotte running away. I came in and found that.
Oh, my. The attendant at the sanitarium.
Yeah. He knew she'd escaped. He found the hole in the fence where she got out, and he's been following her on his own, strangely enough.
He's dead. Marlowe, he's dead. Hook, he's
Rodell.
Dead.
Rodell!
Sorry. Marlowe, she must be completely mad. We've got to stop her. Why, she might go for Ordeen next door.
Or you, what, yeah.
What can we do?
Well, you can go home. She doesn't know that address up there, so you'll be okay on that score.
All right, but...
Rodell, listen. Keep your doors locked up there, will you?
Oh, sure. You said Charlotte...
I know. I'm not thinking about Charlotte now. There's something else. The guy in San Francisco that you owe all that money to.
What about him?
Sent a mug down here who intends to collect it. I've tangled with him already. He means business. So be careful, Rodell, and I'll see you as soon as I can. I watched him go out the door limply, his head down. He looked about as tough as a bowl of whipped cream. And I went back to the desk again and saw that he'd left his overcoat where he dropped it on the chair. I called the police, gave him the word on Charlotte, and when that was over, I had to switch on the desk light to check the sanitarium number before I could call Dr. Chinetti. That's when I saw the letter lying on the desk, an important letter. But for one reason only. It was addressed to Leon Rodell at his house on Lookout Terrace. It was an open invitation to anybody who'd come to the shop looking for that particular piece of information. And there was no doubt in my mind that Charlotte had seen it, which made it long past time for me to get up there and on the double. I turned, headed for the door, and stopped all in one motion. A pair of headlights slashed at the windows and then blinked out. I stepped back out of the circle of light from the desk lamp and waited. A second later, the hulk of Mr. Eager filled the open back door. He was still very sure of himself. He took in the storeroom with one long glance and then sidled through the clutter as deftly as a rumba dancer toward the door where the desk and I were waiting. The instant he got within reach, I swung!
You again, you dirty lout!
Made your pitch once, big man. Why don't you sit on it?
Why, you...
And that squares us up for that clip on the chops you gave me.
Oh, no. No, not quite, mister.
Even Steven now, big man. When he went down that time, he took the chair, Rodell's overcoat, and half the stuff on the desk with him. He was still moving, trying to free himself of the tangle, so I reached for him again, but got only a fistful of the overcoat Rodell had left behind. And suddenly, my hand stung like it grabbed the wrong end of a bumblebee. I jerked it back and looked at the palm. Something was stuck to my skin, something I couldn't understand. Until finally realization oozed through the molasses in my brain. I left and ran all the way to my car and almost sprung the frame, twisting up Lookout Terrace. Parked down the hill from 3840 and ran as far as the house next door where I got to the back, hopped the fence, and got my gun in hand. As I expected, Leon Rodell was there, and so was Charlotte, in a coupe. The door open was poised at the top of the precipitous driveway like the lead car on a roller coaster.
Why are you angry with me?
I'm not angry, Charlotte. Now get in the car. We haven't much time.
I did everything just like you said, Leon. I lost my hand back with your address, and I had...
The car, Charlotte.
I had to find you, didn't I?
You did fine.
I told everything. And then I learned about your shop, and I went there.
Well, you shouldn't have done that,
Leon.
Now get in the car.
Leon, I saw what you'd done to that Mr. Hook from the sanitarium.
The car, Charlotte, we're rushed.
You killed him with a knife.
I had to, Charlotte. He's been spying on us all the time. He knew all our plans, and he wanted lots of money to keep quiet.
It frightens me, Leon. I wish you hadn't.
Stop it, Charlotte. It doesn't matter anymore.
Don't kid yourself, Rodell.
Mr. Marlowe. Oh, I found Leon by myself, so I really don't need you after all.
I only wish you were right, baby. Don't move, Rodell.
Oh, but you don't understand, Mr. Marlowe. Leon and I are going away together on a trip.
I understand, all right, more than you do now, Charlotte, and I think you better go in the house and wait for us.
Oh, no, no, don't you see,
please, do as I ask.
All right. But don't be long.
Some trip you had in mind, Rodell. Your wife in this coupe and straight down over the bank, strictly solo. She didn't even suspect.
Keep your hands off me.
Sure. I'd never get him clean again. It'll give me great satisfaction to drop you with a bullet. And I'll do just that if you take one step before the police get here. So stand still, Rodell.
real still.
Really, all that happened, Dr. Chinetti. I'm sorry you were worried, and I'm awfully glad I'm back.
So am I, my dear. And we'll talk more about it in the morning. What you need right now is a good night's rest in your own bed.
Oh, you're right, Doctor. I'm very tired. Good night, Mr. Marlowe. And thank you.
Good night, Shirley. She still doesn't realize, does she?
No, and it's a good thing. Plenty of time for that later when it can come gradually. At this point, she could tear herself to pieces over a thing like this.
Yeah. Her husband urges her to run away and helps her do it for the sole purpose of getting her out where he can kill her. Not much security in that setup, huh?
No. You mentioned another woman, Mr. Marlowe. Miss Ordine Blackburn.
Oh, Ordine, yeah. Gullible rich girl without much on the ball. Rodell planned to marry her and solve all his money problems. Oh. Believe me, Doc, he had them, big ones.
I see. Well, she's better off this way.
Yeah. 6 months of marriage to Rodell, and she'd have been a candidate for your sanitarium herself. He's that kind of a guy.
And my late employee, Eldon Hook?
Well, he knew that Rodell had been urging his wife to run away and that he cut that hole in the fence. Hook found out that Rodell was interested in Ordine, and he tried to shake Rodell down. Signed his own death warrant on the spot.
You know, it's sometimes frightening to me, Mr. Marlowe, to realize how many warped and twisted minds there are that never get help until it's far too late.
Mm.
But there's always some good in every bad thing, they say.
What about this case?
Charlotte. I expect her to recover completely soon, because now the main contributor to her neurosis, so to speak, is gone forever.
Oh.
That was Leon Rodell.
Yeah, well, Doc, it's a long way back to Hollywood. I better get going, huh?
Just one thing more, if you don't mind.
Hmm?
Charlotte would have died in a smashed car in what would have passed for an accident. Also, she'd have been blamed for Hook's murder if you hadn't found out the truth about Rodell. I'm very curious.
You remember the burrs that grew along your fence outside?
The burrs? A blasted nuisance.
Yeah, but as you just said, Doc, there's always some good in every bad thing. Rodell told me that he hadn't been up here for 3 weeks. And yet tonight his overcoat was loaded with burrs. I got one in my hand from it.
Oh.
That gave me a hunch. Well, from there on it played. Disappointed?
To the contrary, satisfied completely. Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
Good night, Doc. As I left Hillcrest Sanitarium and drove back across the wide, flat San Fernando Valley, dark and quiet in the hour just before dawn, I found myself being grateful for a lot of little, orderly things. Things like the clear white line down the middle of the road, the rhythm of the motor in my car, and the prospect of going home. My own secure apartment. Then I wondered about Charlotte, and the sort of nightmare jungle the world must be to a mind twisted suddenly, out of focus, where there is no symmetry or logic. But nightmares can be banished, huh? Fears driven away. And in time, with Dr. Chinetti's help, she'd come out of it all right. But the others. Others like Hook and Rodell. To them, the jungle is home. No nightmare, that. They live in it by choice. Until one way or another, they're destroyed. Choked to death by the very tangle they hide in. Well, that's fair enough.
Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman McDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Leavitt. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates, Larry Dobkin, Yvonne Patey, Harold Dierenforth, Jack Edwards, and John T. Smith. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time a fireball, too handy with a target pistol, led me down a rocky road past a sleazy money grubber to a curly-headed corpse. And it might have gotten worse if I hadn't slowed down at the hairpin turn.
Battered but unbowed by his bout with Fred Allen last Sunday night, Jack Benny will be back at the same old stand tomorrow night, jaunty as ever, and why not? Jack has just been elected the King of Hearts by the American Heart Association. Listen for Jack Benny tomorrow on CBS. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where Philip Marlowe takes the case every Saturday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
Lieutenant Shark, did you leave a message for me to call?
Yes, I did, Lieutenant. I want you...
It was all bungled up by the time I got it. Snyder got your name and what hotel, but I never did find out who you are and what you wanted with me.
It was about the Alonzo Chapman killing.
Well, what's your interest in that?
I'm an insurance investigator. I was sent out here from Hartford, Connecticut to see what I could learn.
Oh, you were? Well, how'd you get out here so fast?
We got the news at about 8 last night. I was on a plane by midnight and in Los Angeles by noon today.
Well, I must be tired. I don't have any more than I had last night. I suppose you want to talk to me, though.
Right? Yeah, I'd like to.
All right, come on over. But give me an hour so I can get some lunch.
Edmund O'Brien, in a transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office Tri-State Insurance Group, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Alonzo Chapman matter. Expense account item 1, $208.50, airfare and incidentals between Hartford, Connecticut and Los Angeles, California. After a delay of about an hour or so, I was able to make an appointment with Lieutenant Jim Shock, the detective in charge of the case. I met him at about 2:15 and he brought me up to date.
Chapman was registered at the Quincy Hotel. He met this girl in the hotel bar at about 7 last night. They left together about 7:45. Turned in the alley to get to the parking lot where a car was parked, and that's where he was shot, in the alley.
Was it robbery?
No. He was well-heeled, too, over $300. Had in his coat pocket.
What about this girl? We didn't hear about her.
We did. Norma Sale. Picked up on a shoplifting charge last year. But she got a job and stayed out of trouble since. Pretty little thing. Born in Nebraska. She says she met an actor in a road company back there. He told her he'd introduce her to some important people in Hollywood, and maybe she could... Well, you know how it goes.
Yeah, but I wonder if Chapman's wife is going to. She's on her way out here. How long had this girl known him?
Well, she says she just met him last night. I think that's what she said. She was transferred to county jail this morning at 11:30, a material witness. I suppose you want to talk to her.
Yeah, I'd like to.
And so would I. Might as well go on over. Because it's growing too fast. That's why. We got too many people. We got too many cars. Too much of everything, but streets. It's a mess. Of course, I don't know anything about Hartford. I've never been there.
Well, it's a little slower paced than Los Angeles, but it's got its problems.
Yeah, I suppose every place has something.
Here she is, Lieutenant.
Oh.
We just called Cassidy when he wanted to send her back to herself.
Yeah, all right. I'll do that.
Thanks.
Oh, come along in, Norma. This man is Mr. Dollar. He's an insurance investigator from back east.
How do you do, Miss Ann?
Hello.
You can just sit down. How are you feeling today?
Not very good.
I tried to talk to you last night after Mr. Chapman was shot. You remember?
I sort of half remember. I went to pieces, I guess.
Yeah, you did. Couldn't get anything that even sounded like a statement from you. That's why I had you held, so we could talk it over today.
Sure. But I don't know anything. We left and then it happened.
How long had you known Mr. Chapman?
I just met him last night.
He made regular visits to Los Angeles. Are you sure you didn't meet him before?
Of course I'm sure. Why would I lie about that? We just struck up a friendship last night.
How did that happen?
Well, I dropped into the bar at the Quincy for a drink, and he started to talk to me.
Uh-huh. What all did he say?
It was just one of those things that happens all the time. I knew it was a pitch, but he seemed like a nice guy. He just didn't want to be alone. He asked me if I knew any good places to eat, and I told him about a place I like out towards Hollywood, so he asked me if I'd show him.
You ought to be more careful who you get friendly with. Or maybe I'd better turn that around and say you ought to be more careful about who knows you're getting friendly with somebody.
I guess I don't get you.
Well, we're looking for a reason somebody would want to kill Chapman. Maybe a man friend of yours?
Well, it couldn't be anything like that. I don't have any steady boyfriends.
Well, that's not saying there isn't somebody who wants to be one, is it? Well,
there isn't anybody, and that's the truth. If it had been somebody I knew, I would have recognized him, wouldn't I?
And it's possible that you might want to protect him if you did know him.
I didn't know him. There isn't anybody who'd do anything like that.
No, I can't hold with that, Norma. You're young. You're pretty. Why, I should think there'd be a bunch of young bucks after you. Boys from that store where you work, maybe.
I tell you, there isn't. It's the truth. There isn't. If there was, I'd tell you.
Well, maybe you would. We've got to find a reason that Chapman was killed.
I don't know. It wasn't because he was with me.
All right now, Norma. Don't get all upset again. You've got to remember some other things.
I hope you aren't holding anything back, Norma. You know that we can learn the truth from other people.
Sure I do. Ask the girls I work with. Ask Jeannie Stevens. She ought to know. She's lived with me for almost a year.
All right, Norma. Now, when you and this Chapman decided on a place to go for dinner, you left the hotel. You started for your car in the parking lot, huh?
Yes.
You turned into the alley, which was a shorter trip than going around the corner, and this gunman was waiting there. Hmm?
It wasn't dark, was it?
No, not quite.
How far down the alley was this man?
Well, it was not very good at measuring, but must have been about halfway to the parking lot.
There's a big trash box there behind one of the buildings. This man was waiting behind the box, and when you came by, he stepped out and fired 3 shots and ran away.
And it was light enough so that you could get a good look at him?
Yes, it was darker in the alley, but I'd have recognized anybody I knew.
Would you remember if you saw him again?
I'm not sure. Maybe I would.
Now, Norma, it's up to us to figure out how come this killer was waiting there, where he was. It beats me how he knew Chapman was going to pass by that box.
I don't know.
You can see how odd it looks, Norma. If he didn't know Chapman was coming that way, he must have known that you were.
I don't know how it happened. I'm telling the truth. Maybe somebody heard us talking in the bar.
Heard enough to know you and Chapman would go through the alley?
Maybe somebody could have. I don't remember exactly how it went, but I told him where my car was parked. Yes, I said just down the alley, I remember.
And then did you leave?
No, not right away. We had another drink.
Well, that'll take about 10 or 15 minutes, I suppose. Well, how about it, Dollar?
I don't think I have anything more. Thanks, Norma.
All right.
I'll get Cassidy to take you down. I'd like to send you home, Norma. Maybe tomorrow. You know how it goes.
To both Lieutenant Shock and me, the jealousy motive was still first choice. As a matter of fact, at that point, it was the only choice. Nothing in Alonzo Chapman's room or among his effects gave a hint of a murder motive. The Cleveland police had been requested to send anything they had on him, and local men were at work checking his Los Angeles business associates and his movements. Chuck left to question Norma Sale's roommate, and I went back to satisfy myself on the beginning of it all. I waited for the evening bartender at the Quincy Hotel.
Now I'm not busy. We won't get crowded for another hour.
How about last night? Were you crowded about 7, 7:30?
Oh, yeah, yes, Swamp. If you'd asked me about anybody else in the place, I couldn't tell you a thing. But I remember this little blonde dame and this guy Chapman.
I'm glad to hear that. Usually doesn't happen this way.
Yeah, I suppose not, but I'll tell you how it was. You see, Chapman had been in a hotel for a few days, you know.
Yeah, I got in Friday last week.
Well, I'm not sure when I first met him, but he'd drop in for an early drink, like, you know, 4:45, 5:00.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we'd talk a little bit, then he'd go up to his room and come back around 7 and stay for another hour or so. I tell you, it was bound to happen.
What do you mean?
Oh, not his getting killed, not that part of it. I mean a little blonde. I didn't know what he was saying to her or anything, but when she came in, the bar stools were all taken. Chapman spots her and gives her his place.
How long had he been there?
Just a couple of minutes. I hadn't gotten around to taking his order yet, but when I did, he ordered for the both of them. Then after that round, they moved to one of the booths.
Did you happen to notice another man who could have been interested in them and could have been close enough to overhear them?
Oh, no, gee, the place was full. I didn't notice. Oh, maybe the bar girl did, Grace Curcio. She'll be in at 5:30 if you want to talk to her.
I'll have to come back later. Chapman's widow is due to arrive in about 20 minutes.
That masher had a wife?
Yeah, how about that?
Oh, I'm no stuffed shirt, but if that guy acted this way in all the towns he hit, she's better off without him. Now, I'll ask Grace if you want. What's your hotel?
The Larkin. If she does remember something about it, I'd appreciate a call. Huh?
Sure, sure. My name is Howard.
Thanks a lot, Howard. See you later.
Lieutenant Shark.
Lieutenant, this is Dollar.
Oh, you got anything to report, Dollar?
Nothing that does us any good. Mrs. Chapman just checked into the hotel. I'm in the lobby there now. How did you make out with Norma's roommate?
Oh, just fine. She seems like a level-headed sort of girl. She says Norma hasn't gone with any one particular man for a year. That one's name was Clyde Mills. Served a 6-month sentence on some charge or other, not important what, but they're all washed up. She says he's not even in town, but we'll look for him anyway.
Yeah, I'm going up to talk to the widow, if it's all right with you.
Sure, go right ahead. Make a suspect out of her if you can. We need some.
Could be. From what I hear, she had a motive, not counting the insurance money. But I don't know whether she knew it or not. I'll check with you later. Meeting Mrs. Chapman was quite a surprise to me. I naturally expected to find the widow approximately the same age as the dead man, something near 50. But she wasn't. She looked to be only a few years over 30, if that.
Don't feel like you have to try and make things easy for me, Mr. Dollar. You don't.
All right, Mrs. Chapman.
Did he suffer much?
No, he died almost instantly.
If it had to happen, I'm glad it went that way, then. I hope you understand.
I'm trying to. I take it you weren't too fond of your husband.
I wasn't. And it would be stupid for me to tell you anything else or to act any other way than I am acting.
We're still looking for the reason your husband was killed.
You said he was taking this girl someplace.
He was, but we haven't been able to make anything out of that yet. She says there's nobody who would kill out of jealousy.
I saw her picture in the paper.
We doubted her, too. But our closest friend wouldn't have any reason to protect someone who had tried to kill Miss Sale. She said there was nobody.
Well, there are other men who'd have good reason to kill him. You didn't know him, did you?
No, I'd never seen him.
He was good-looking. Not tall, but he sort of looked it. He took care of himself. The iron gray hair. He was better-looking when he passed 45 than he ever was when he was young.
I was surprised that you were so young, Mrs. Chapman.
That's why. He was attractive to women. My bad luck was leaving Cleveland and letting myself get roped into a marriage. I found out about one of these girls, and then he started bragging about all the others.
You mean it's possible that a man followed him to Los Angeles from someplace else and killed him?
I don't know, but I do know that he must have hurt a lot of people. Well, he's through hurting me. I've stuck it out because I knew this was going to happen someday. Every time I've read about a murder like this, I knew it would happen to him. Now it has. Now I own a house. I have a bank account. Insurance money. I'm finally getting something from my marriage.
I tried to phone Lieutenant Shock a report on my meeting with the overly honest Mrs. Chapman, but he was out of his office getting the teletyped answer to the request he'd made for information from the Cleveland police. So I cabbed over to see him.
Now, I'm not saying that what Mrs. Chapman says isn't possible, but I don't want to go off half-cocked on a wild goose chase.
I didn't think you'd like it. I don't either. Chapman came here from Fresno by train, so say it would have to be some guy from there.
We'll see why he didn't. Well, say he didn't kill him in Fresno because he thought he wouldn't draw suspicion down here.
How did this guy locate him? Chapman didn't reserve a room at the Quincy. He usually stayed someplace else, so he'd have to be followed.
That's no good, Dollar. Why, you couldn't expect an inexperienced man from Fresno to do a job of tailing like that through Union Station from there to the Quincy and all this this traffic. It's possible, I suppose.
You're going to check it, then?
I guess so.
Probably wouldn't be too hard to get a list of the people who got on that train at Fresno.
Yeah, list of hard up for motives. Now we got them all over the country. He was old enough to know better.
Lieutenant.
What?
Here's a follow up on that stuff from Cleveland.
Oh, thanks.
Great.
Well, this is darn nice of those boys.
Get something?
Hey, Chapman phoned Cleveland that day. He checked in, didn't he?
Yeah, it was Friday. Why?
Look at this. Seems like his missus was seeing a lot of a man named Nicholson. He's known to have left Cleveland on Friday night, and he hasn't been seen since.
Hmm.
I like this a whole lot better. Yeah, this could be what we wanted. A man with a motive who knew where Chapman was. You think it's time you met the honest widow?
Return you to the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment.
Melody knows no boundary, neither does joy, as Russ Emery and Judy Lynn sing their hearts into yours. And Ray Block's orchestra and chorus offer the music that's great from the 48. It's the full-hour Ray Block Music Party every Friday night over most of these same CBS stations. Listen for it this Friday. A whole hour of the songs America loves. The music the nation dances to and lives by on Ray Block's Music Party. Now with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return you to the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Mr. Chapman, this is Lieutenant Shock investigating your husband's murder.
How do you do?
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Chapman. Well, I'm sorry about the circumstances.
It's not very pleasant.
Mr. Chapman, we never did get around to talking about your friend, Carl Nicholson, did we?
What do you mean?
Well, you told me about some of the improvements your husband's death was going to bring you, but you didn't mention Carl Nicholson.
Please. I know I sounded hard when I talked to you. I shouldn't have said some of the things.
I thought you were being honest.
I was. Too honest, I'm afraid.
I don't think so.
Mrs. Chapman, I've been in touch with the police back in your hometown. They found out somehow about this Carl Nicholson. First, they said you'd been seeing quite a lot of him, especially when your husband was out of town. Is that right?
Yes, it's true.
What were your feelings toward Nicholson at that time, that is, prior to your husband's death?
I'm fond of Carl. I never made any secret of that. He's my age. We have a lot of things in common.
You know where he is?
Why, in Cleveland.
Oh, now that's funny. The police told me he was out of town.
I don't know what this means. I don't understand.
You didn't know he left town?
No, I didn't.
Now, if you were fond of each other and you had all these things in common, it seems to me you deserve to be told if he was just going up and leave town.
When did you see him last, Mrs. Chapman?
It was last week.
Friday, by any chance?
No. It was before then. It was Wednesday or Thursday. Why are you asking me these things?
The police back there went on to tell me that this Nicholson left town on Friday.
The Cleveland police? Why should they even care about Carl?
Because I told them that on Friday, your husband had telephoned you from the hotel where he was staying here in Los Angeles. Isn't that right?
Yes, but I don't know what you mean.
Didn't you see Nicholson on Friday after you talked to your husband?
No. Do you mean that you think I told him where Al was staying and that he came out here?
Now, Mrs. Chapman, we didn't say we thought anything, but it's our job to solve this murder. We aren't saying we think you and him planned the whole thing and that he hopped out of here the first thing after he learned where your husband was staying. But there are a lot of things that aren't clear in our minds.
The theory you gave me about all these wronged men around the country didn't hold up too well, Mrs. Chapman.
It wasn't a theory. I just told you what I'd been thinking.
You said you'd been waiting for it to happen. But the way we see it, the way your husband was killed, where he was killed, makes a jealous out-of-town man seem too far-fetched.
But we're looking into it. Don't you worry about that.
Do you have a reason to think that Carl has been in Los Angeles?
We're covering the possibility that he might have been.
Maybe you just mentioned the Quincy Hotel in passing, casually, so you hardly remember.
No. I haven't seen Carl or talked to him since before Al called me. I didn't tell him.
Why did he happen to leave town on Friday?
I told you, I don't know. I didn't know he'd left.
Well, with all these things in common, what did you think when the news about your husband reached Cleveland? Didn't you wonder about why you hadn't talked to this Nicholson all those days?
Yes, I did wonder.
Yeah, now, why didn't you tell us all that without all this back and forth?
Because it would have sounded so awful.
Do you think you improved things by holding back?
I don't know. Maybe I didn't. The last time I saw Carl was on Wednesday. We had a fight and he walked out.
You can prove that's the last time you saw him?
Prove? I haven't been thinking about anything like that. We fought over the same thing for almost a year. Carl wanted me to get a divorce, and I wouldn't.
Because you were waiting for your husband to get killed. Did you ever tell Carl that?
Yes.
You tell him that during this fight on Wednesday?
I think so.
But you didn't talk to him after that?
No.
Could you have learned someplace else where your husband was staying?
I don't know. I don't know who else Al called. Carl wouldn't kill him. I'm positive of that.
Would you happen to have a photograph of Nicholson?
Why?
Some are on their way by radio photo and some others by airmail. But we might be able to save time if you have some.
I have one. I want to erase something off the back.
Now, don't you fret, Mrs. Chapman. We'll show it to a couple of people. If Carl is innocent like you think he is, this is the quickest way to prove that, too.
Gee, I'd sure like to help you. You know, if I'd seen a snap before...
Sure, don't say anything you're unsure.
What did the bar girl say?
Almost the same thing you did. It was crowded and she wasn't sure.
Oh, I'm awful sorry.
That's all right. I'd rather have a careful witness like you than one that thinks he has to say something to live up to the title.
Well, this guy could have been here and he couldn't have been. That's the best I can do. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Howard. It's okay.
I'll do better next time. I'll keep my eyes open from now on. Maybe I'll get on a force someday, huh, Lieutenant?
They say a boat is so expensive to keep up that before long you don't own it. It owns you. So we sold it, and there went my fishing trips. You get much back there?
Yeah, but I haven't gotten back into it since before the war.
Yeah, you ought to. Everybody ought to. It's the best nerve tonic.
Lieutenant.
Well, oh, thanks. We won't be long.
I'll take it down when you're through.
Hello, Norma.
Hello.
We've got a picture of a man we want you to look at, Norma.
Why?
Well, you look at it. Come on, get a good, bright light on it here.
Who is he?
You ever seen this man?
I couldn't swear, but I think he could be the one that shot Mr. Girk. I hate to say for sure because Mr. Chapman was on that side.
Look at it again, Norma. What is there that you think you recognize?
Well, maybe I'm wrong, but the way his hair, right here, the way some of it hangs down across his forehead.
This man's about Dollar's height.
Well, I'm not sure of that. He was kind of crouched.
But you think you saw the hair?
I don't even know why I think that, but when I close my eyes, it seems like I can see his face.
Yeah, well, now you take a long look at it. Study it. We'll have some more pictures of this man tomorrow. And if you can be sure, why, then maybe we can let you look at him flesh and blood.
What happened so fast?
Just take your time and forget the lieutenant and me.
If I could, I'd leave it so you could study it all night, but it's a piece of evidence, and therefore it belongs to the state, so I can't leave it.
As it turned out, we didn't have to take that photograph or any other picture back to Norma Sales for identification. The first reason turned up that night. There was another message from the Cleveland police. The body of our chief suspect, Carl Nicholson, had been removed from the remains of his car. The crash had occurred within 200 miles of his home. Witnesses said that he had been returning from a friend's country place, and the alcoholic content of his blood gave credence to Mrs. Chapman's story that they had quarreled. It became obvious later that he had been on a week's drunk. In addition to killing him, it had removed him in other respects as a suspect. The other thing that changed the direction of the matter was not as closely connected to any of the principals. As a matter of fact, hardly connected at all. It was a story on the front page of the next morning's paper. A man named Max Gerber, with a criminal background, had been found shot to death. Along with a year-old picture of him was printed the fact that he had been staying at the Quincy Hotel. With Lieutenant Shock, I went to view Max Gerber's remains and his effects. And at 10 that morning, Norma Sale was once more ushered into us.
Well, Norma, we seem to keep you busy, don't we?
Sit down, Norma.
Did you bring some more pictures?
Not the same as we brought last night. That wasn't the man you saw in the alley.
I wasn't sure.
The bartender at the Quincy says he'd never seen you in there before the other night. Why'd you happen to go there?
I don't know. Guess it seemed like a good idea because I hadn't been there.
Was there some special that took you there, Norma? There must be quite a few sort of bars where you haven't been.
There wasn't anything special.
Well, I think it's fair to tell you that we checked the store where you worked and found out that you left there at 3:30 that day.
I didn't feel very good.
You felt good enough to go to the Quincy. You felt good enough to let yourself get picked up by this man.
Well, I guess that's my business, isn't it? What I want to do and who I want to be with?
Why, sure it is, Norm.
Who did you want to be with?
What do you mean?
A man named Alonzo Chapman or a man named Max Gerber?
I just went in, that's all, and I met this guy.
You didn't go into that bar expecting to meet some special man, did you?
No.
Not even if you were paid to meet him?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
That man that was killed. I mean, the one you were with. Did you know what he did for a living?
He said he was a salesman.
Well, that's what we're getting at. He was a salesman.
We cut two pictures out of the paper, Norma. Here's one. This the man you met at the Quincy?
Yes.
You sure, Norma?
Yes, I am.
This man wasn't killed in the alley the other night.
He's the man I was with.
No, he isn't.
This man was killed last night, Norma, right outside the Quincy Hotel.
Here's the picture of the other man. They look alike, don't they?
They're the same.
I saw the suit Max Gerber was wearing. Even it was sort of the same as Chapman's. It was brown.
But they're the same. I mean, it was Gerber.
It was Gerber you were supposed to meet.
It was Gerber.
No, it wasn't, Norma.
Yes, it was.
All right. You were supposed to pick up Gerber in that bar, weren't you?
I didn't know what they were going to do.
But you did pick this man up and take him down that alley.
They said he owed them some money and that's all they wanted.
Tell us how you found this man in the bar, Norma.
They pointed him out in the lobby. He made a phone call and then he went into the bar. I went in after him.
Brown suit, gray hair?
Yes.
It was Alonzo Chapman you took out to get killed.
No, it wasn't.
Why should we tell you it was if it wasn't?
You're lying to me. You're trying to trick me.
No. They just made a mistake.
They pointed him out.
Then you made the mistake.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I did what they said. They told me I had to, and I did. They sent me because I was blonde, and it was the right one. They didn't say they were going to kill him. He just owed them some money. That's all they wanted. That's all I wanted. I didn't want anybody to get killed. I was blonde, and I was young, and that's why they sent me. For money.
Expense account item 2, miscellaneous, while in Los Angeles, $255.08. Item 3, same as item 1, transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $672.08. Remarks, the second murder, Max Gerber's, was a gangland rubout, planned with the aid of a young blonde as bait. The first murder was only a mistake. The apparent moral is that companies shouldn't hire salesmen. Women shouldn't marry them. Young blondes should stay away from them, but confidentially, some of my best friends are insurance salesmen. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Gil Dowd with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Edmund O'Brien can soon be seen in the Paramount Pictures production, Warpath. Featured in tonight's cast were Hi Everback, John McIntyre, Harry Lang, Jeanette Nolan, and Virginia Gregg. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. Beginning next Wednesday, Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, will be heard 1/2 hour later on most of these same stations. This is Dick Cutting inviting you to join us next week at 9:30 Eastern Daylight Saving Time when Edmund O'Brien returns as Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Every time you buy a United States defense bond, you help in our defense effort and you help build your personal security. Yes, defense bonds are good for you and good for your country. Remember, defense is your job. Buy United States defense bonds. Been to the waxworks lately? It's nothing like being taken to the cleaners, though 45 minutes of cleaner fun would be hard to find. You'll enjoy this evening's session of songs and stuff featuring Robert Q. Lewis, his guests, platters, chatter, and assorted pleasantries. It's the Robert Q. Lewis Waxworks, open for business 5 evenings a week, Monday through Friday, on most of these same CBS stations. Today, the United States is celebrating the 175th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Stay tuned now for the official U.S. anniversary program with President Harry S. Truman, Secretary of Defense General George C. Marshall, Chief Justice Fred M. Vinson, and others who follow immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the show for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. Between now and then, you can find more old-time radio at relicradio.com, more from Case Closed, and a variety of other types of shows. There's also links there to our forum, Shoutcast stream, and everything else Relic Radio. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you can do so from the website as well. Thank you very much to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.